Today is Wednesday. It is May 24th, 2017. It's 10:42 in the morning. I'm John Williams. You're listening to Playing Politics, a weekly podcast recorded at the studios of WCCO Radio. If you're not listening to this right now, it's startribune.com/opinion. You can always find this podcast in its entirety there. We also post it on the WCCO Radio Facebook page, and portions of this are broadcast on my Wednesday afternoon show at 3:40 on WCCO Radio.
I'm John Rash, columnist and editorial writer for the Star Tribune.
And I'm Lori Sturtevant, columnist and editorial writer for the Star Tribune, calling from the Capitol basement.
Yeah, thank you for that, Lori. We'll keep this brief. I know your health isn't what it normally is, and we'll do the best we can to plow through hundreds of millions of dollars here in the next few minutes. Is it true, Lori Sturtevant, that Minnesota at least has the problem that other states would envy? It's not like we don't have enough money, but we're just trying to figure out how to spend it.
Well, that's right. About half of the states, I understand right now, are in deficit. Minnesota's not one of them, though our surplus is smaller than it sounds. It's down to $1.5 billion out of about a $46 billion budget. And there's now been pretty decent agreement on how to spend that money, as of Monday night anyway. We're down to arguing about some of the fine points here.
So we're close then to having a passed budget?
Well, there's real doubt about how close we are this morning. There was an attempt to have this budget put into law by 7 a.m. today, and it didn't happen.
Today, meaning Wednesday the
24th. Five big bills yet to pass, and two of them have cleared one chamber, the House, but the other bills were either delayed or are otherwise in a cloudy situation here. We don't really know when this is all going to come to a head.
What's the biggest stumbling block, Lori, or stumbling blocks?
Just plain logistics is one of the stumbling blocks right now. It was unrealistic, I think, to expect that this would come together as quickly as legislative leaders expected. When they hit the regular session deadline of midnight Monday, they said, we can have this done by 7 a.m. Wednesday, not thinking about what really is entailed in putting together, say, for example, a Health and Human Services bill that is it spends about 35 or 40% of the state budget, and it runs to 700 or 800 pages in length. That's just not feasible, and that's one of the bills that's still out right now.
Well, what are they arguing about with respect to that?
That appears to be one that, when it arrives, won't be so contentious. We have continuing arguments within the tax bill about, for example, should we give cigarettes and cigars a $30 million tax break in the next 2 years? That's one of the issues. And there are a lot of issues about a non-budget bill that's been added to the list, and that's the one that we call in capital shorthand preemption. It has to do with whether or not cities should be allowed to set their own labor standards. We're talking about paid leave for sickness or for birth of a child. We're talking about minimum wage, for example. Minneapolis and St. Paul want to go their own way on that, and other municipalities might at some point want to follow suit, but the business community is working hard to put a state roadblock in front of that. Governor Dayton says he will veto a bill that contains a state roadblock to those sorts of municipal actions, but the Republicans mm-hmm. have loaded into the bill things that Dayton wants, like, for example, a pension improvement for pension funding improvement for state employees, and an opportunity for paid parenting leave for state employees that now exists only as a memorandum of understanding and will go away if the legislature does not act on it in the next day or so.
Some of those labor issues that the Republicans are putting forward, we've talked about on our shows at WCCO. It's kind of interesting because where you think Republican agendas usually favor control at the most local level, this is the state actually talking to the various municipalities about what things like paid leave and minimum wage can be, right?
Oh, yeah, and from just a governance standpoint, it's a fascinating question. As you said, Republicans typically like local control. But in this case, local control irritates the business community, with usually strong Republican allies, as they seek to have something uniform, certainly throughout a particular the metropolitan area, and ideally in their minds, throughout the whole state. Yet we all know the economy, the cost of living, is quite different in the Twin Cities as compared with some of the rural areas in the western part of the state. So there's an argument to be made for some flexibility and variability around the state on these kinds of questions.
Laurie, what do you think about that, John?
Well, I think that what's quite compelling are the optics on all of this. You know, here we have a situation where, as Laurie mentioned, nearly half the United States are in a deficit situation. Minnesota is blessed with a budget surplus, and yet there seems to be a considerable amount of acrimony at the Capitol throughout the session, a need to go into overtime and then missing that deadline as well. And so whatever benefits from that surplus may come out of these bills, and indeed they may be significant to certain constituencies, may get lost in the debate and the public disappointment over the process portion of this. And, you know, so often when these events transpire, you get people saying that fundamentally this is not a way that my workplace or me as an individual employee could operate within a workplace, and why does the legislature have to, you know, have it happen this way? So it'll be interesting to see the way that the politics play. And I would also add that Minnesota is, of course, you know, a geographic entity, but it's also a brand from the perspective of how people perceive the state nationally and even internationally. And Minnesota has long benefited from having a brand as a state that works extraordinarily well. And this is now, you know, one of many times over the last decade or so that a special session has been needed. It's not nearly as bruising of a PR image to the PR image as the state government shutdown was a few years back, but certainly this doesn't make the state look good in terms of outside investors' eyes as well.
Well, guys, maybe you just answered my next question, because I see headlines all week long like budget deadline. State misses, a Minnesota legislature misses another budget deadline in the Star Tribune. And I don't know how important a deal that is. So they're a few days late on a budget that'll last years. What do I really care? You know?
I went back and looked at the record, John, from since 1992, so 25 years, we've had 8 special sessions to finish up a budget. It's kind of common. 2 of those years, 2005 and 2011, wound up in government shutdowns in the month of July, and that's what you don't want to happen, because that's really disruptive in a lot of ways, and a lot of things that we just take for granted as state government functions suddenly go away, and we see the kind of havoc that can cause in some sectors of the economy. But I think short of that, Minnesotans have grown rather tolerant of a little hiccup or two at the end. But bear in mind, we've had divided government in the control of 2 or for a while 3 parties for all but 2 of the last 27 years. That's a long time to be living with divided government. And so we're used to some struggle here at the end.
Well, but divided government, I think I've picked up from you two in the last, months that we've been doing this, the divided government isn't a bad thing. That's the art of compromise. That's how we make our sausage, right?
No, it's not a bad thing when compromise happens. And actually, if we can get there in the next few days, I think that the Star Tribune editorial page will be prepared to compliment these people on getting to compromise. It might not be the compromise we would have chosen, but that's the nature of compromise. People will look at this and will find ways to fault it. But if they can accomplish 3 things that they have not been able to do, I think Minnesotans will cheer. They haven't for several years now had a tax bill, a bonding bill, or a substantial increase in transportation funding. All 3 of those things could happen if the deal that was tentatively struck Monday night now can be executed, can go forward.
Hmm. John, is there something that the Star Tribune editorial board, maybe Lori just answered that question, wants from this legislature, expediency notwithstanding? Is there something that you all end up going to be critical of the legislature or applaud them most for?
Well, certainly we need to see how everything shakes out, but we have long been consistent advocates of transportation and transit funding, and during many episodes of this legislative session, it appears particularly the latter has been directly threatened, and at one point by an extraordinary 40% degree, and so that probably won't happen. So to some degree, we may be applauding, you know, avoiding disaster here. We've also been consistent advocates of educational investment, recognizing that, you know, it's not only just simply the right thing to do and the fundamentally the most important thing that state legislatures and state governments can and should do, but we are in a global competition for talent and for growing our economy here. And so having the strongest, among the strongest educational states is something that should be able to bring bipartisan support and yet seems elusive often at the Capitol.
Yeah.
Oh, I think well, that's let's just, well said, John.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One last thing then from the two of you before we go. Lori, pardon me, I'm interrupting you. What were you going to add?
Oh, I was going to add one thing that we haven't mentioned, but that is of great concern to me, and I think we will mention in editorials. We're also looking at state government's long-range fiscal stability, and that will be something that I think we will fault this legislative deal about. It uses about $350 million in one-time money, money that isn't going to be coming back, for human services spending. That means that the 2019 legislature is going to have a problem paying for programs that help the disabled, help the elderly, provide Medicaid for kids, the kinds of things that tug at the heartstrings a bit, but that have been growing in cost. And, of course, that's an area where there's great uncertainty about federal support. Many of these programs involve federal matching dollars. So that's a worry that we will have coming out of this legislative session.
My last question to the two of you is about the federal dollars. The president has just put forward a $4 trillion budget. It would involve cuts to some Minnesotans. Is it too soon to sort of break it down at the local level since it's just a budget proposal from the executive branch? We don't even know what the legislature is going to do with it. But, John, maybe if we just keep our eye on the long game here, what does this budget mean to Minnesota?
Too soon for specifics, but certainly not too soon to get the general direction of where President Trump and a Republican-led House and Senate are going. And it looks like there could be very significant, if not draconian, cuts to some of the same programs. As Lori just mentioned, some of them, you know, federal matching funds to state investment as well. And I think that, you know, these are things that, as Lori very correctly mentioned, you know, should be on the mind of legislators, that they do not exacerbate whatever challenges that the federal process brings about. But you're certainly going to hear a whole lot of debate about that. And, you know, next week at this time, we'll also have a better sense from the Congressional Budget Office. Estimates are due to be released this afternoon about what the AHCA, the health care bill that the House recently passed and that President Trump backs, what it might mean in terms of the amount of cuts of funding, as well as the estimated amount of individuals who would lose health insurance. And, of course, a whole lot of that may be pushed back on the states as well. So the stakes for the states, and as well as the political parties, are going to be extraordinary in the 2018 election, trying to contend with all these issues.
Well, it'll feel really real if there's a 29% cut to the SNAP program in Minnesota. Your newspaper today notes 400,000 Minnesotans rely on food stamps, known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and the president's proposal would cut that by 29%. I don't know if that means 29% of the people are off, or there'll be one-third less food for people generally that use the program, but people will feel that. You know, now this isn't just Washington, D.C. Now this will really hit them in their grocery cart.
And they may be some of the same people who are facing cutbacks in their ability to get health insurance as well. So, you know, some of these problems compound on the same sector of society. And, you know, Minnesota has always, you know, taken, I think, the right approach in terms of trying to help those who are going through these significant struggles in life. And so, you know, this is something that should be of keen interest to our congressional delegation in trying to mitigate some of the impact of these costs, as well as for state lawmakers in St. Paul, because as Laura and I both mentioned, this is going to be on their plate probably next year as well.
I'm kind of a demography geek, and I'm always aware of the demography, the demographic change Minnesota faces with a growing number of elderly people who will be needing the kinds of support that Medicaid supplies. When Minnesotans hear about Medicaid cuts, they should think about people in nursing homes and people who in other kinds of assisted living settings that rely on that federal program to continue to function. That's a big blow to Minnesota if those funds are cut.
Mulvaney, the budget director, said, he's the budget director, isn't he? He said people who need the money are going to get the money. Well, I hope they can make that happen, because somebody's not going to get money, and those people are going to think that they needed it. So we will continue to follow that story here as we wrap up this edition of the Playing Politics podcast. Hopefully the next time this podcast is broadcast, we'll have a budget and everything will be swell in Minnesota. I, however, will be in Chicago with my new radio station and show. I'm on WGN Radio in Chicago. Have been for a while, but my last broadcast is going to be soon, and this will be my last podcast with the two of you. I'm a big fan of your newspaper. I'm a big fan of your staffs and editorial board. And I want you guys to keep doing the good work that you do, both in print, online, and as a podcast, because if it was ever important for people to be reading newspapers, it is now. So thanks for letting me be a part of your podcast, guys, and keep up the good work.
And thank you so much, John, for your participation and your keen interest in this and in the newspaper, as well as your participation in everything here up in Minnesota in the upper Midwest, and certainly not the last time we're going to talk, last time we're going to do this podcast. But we want to thank you as well and wish you continued success throughout your career, especially in your new role at WGN. So thank you very much.
Yeah, all best wishes to you, John. We're going to miss you.
I want to pay taxes in Minnesota, not Illinois.
Light is on here for you. You're always welcome, my friend. So,
all right. Okay, so that wraps it up. This is the Playing Politics podcast. Our engineer is Dan Culhane. I'm John Williams. Once again, if you're not listening to this, it's startribune.com/opinion. You can hear it there. We will broadcast part of this and continue to broadcast part of this Wednesday afternoons on WCCO.